This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
The UK's digital tech scene is accelerating, and the proof is in the Unicorn Kingdom Pathfinder Awards. This year, we celebrate the next generation of pioneering startups that are shaping the tech landscape of tomorrow. The UK is a thriving ecosystem with access to global talent, cutting-edge research, and unparalleled investment opportunities. Your big idea belongs here. Visit great.gov.uk/UKPA to learn more.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, welcome to this Moneybox podcast. An ex-pensions minister has told Moneybox that the Department for Work and Pensions is exploiting grieving people by trying to take back pensions it paid by mistake after their loved one died. And why do high savings rates mean you pay more tax on your wages or pensions? But first, since we revealed last week that energy firms were sending out bills for money they had no right to ask for, our inbox has been groaning, and indeed still is. No energy firm is allowed to send out a new bill for gas or electricity, which was used more than 12 months before. It's called back billing. It was banned by the regulator Ofgem 7 years ago. Last week, we reported that thousands of people have complained that it's still going on. And now, the chair of the House of Commons Energy Security Committee has told Moneybox the behaviour of the energy firms is, and I quote, outrageous. We'll hear more from MP Bill Esterson shortly. But first, our reporter who broke the story, Dan Whitworth, can bring us the latest. Dan.
Yes, Paul, as you say, we've had hundreds of people contact us about our story on back billing from last weekend, many of them with very similar experiences. Often wildly inaccurate new bills going back years. Some of the bills were correct, but for homes that people had already left years before after paying what they thought was a final bill, only to get a new one out of the blue.
And what happened if they complained about this?
Well, instead of just cancelling these bills, suppliers are, in many of the cases I've investigated, insisting people should pay up using what some customers described to me as threatening and bullying tactics. Well, we can hear from some of those cases, starting with David, who got what he says is not only a totally inaccurate bill, but one that's trying to charge him for energy from 2.5 years ago, which, again, just to remind people, is in clear breach of the regulations.
On the 2nd of December, I received a bill which came to £11,432.17. I have received more and more threatening letters demanding money with what I consider to be menaces. It is a disgrace.
My name is Kat and I live in Wiltshire. On New Year's Eve, out of the blue, I was sent an electricity bill for £11,500 with 7 days to pay for alleged energy usage going back to 2021. That was for an energy supply that had not been used since 2019.
My name is Jennifer and I'm from Mansfield in Nottinghamshire. I was backbilled for over £2,000 around August 2020.
Hi, my name is Melissa. I'm from Kenilworth in Warwickshire. In September 2024, I was initially given a bill from my energy supplier for £4,500. Subsequently,
this is Stephen from Amersham in Buckinghamshire. I received a back bill of approximately £300.
I've been sent from pillar to post. They're not taking any responsibility and not properly dealing with my complaint at all.
Finally got through to a senior manager because I refused to give up after 4 months. The amount was taken off. They acknowledged that I should never have been.
I took my case to the energy ombudsman, who decided in my favour. The debt was eventually wiped off by my energy supplier.
I think it's absolutely appalling and they should be ashamed of themselves.
So you can hear, Hope I, Paul, the sort of stress there, really, from people having to deal with hours of phone calls, writing emails, trying to get bills cancelled, perhaps over many months, and some only getting help when they take their complaint to the energy ombudsman.
And that last listener, Dan, saying energy suppliers should be ashamed of themselves, any sign of that?
Well, Energy UK, which speaks for the big suppliers, reiterated to me that suppliers should be complying with the rules, but if customers think they're being asked to pay for energy covered by the back billing policy, they should contact their supplier as soon as possible. It added, which has a duty to resolve the complaint quickly and efficiently. It also said the issue of back billing accounts for a relatively small proportion of overall complaints.
Well, thanks, Dan. Well, I'm joined now by the Labour MP, Bill Esterson, who is the chair of the Commons Energy Security Committee. And Bill Esterson, thousands of customers complaining, hundreds contacting Moneybox, still are today, all about this subject. What was your reaction when you heard we found firms were breaking or ignoring the clear Ofgem rules?
Paul, thank you very much for asking me to respond to this. I mean, listening to your listeners' comments, I stand by what I said. This is utterly outrageous and really quite chilling. This point about the way people were treated, and I went through this with an energy supplier, and they made us feel like we were criminals. And we went to the Ombudsman and won. I worry so many people can't do that, or don't realise they can do it and end up paying. And I think for vulnerable customers, this is a really big problem. But just one other thing about my own experience. I was told by the supplier, once the Ombudsman had found in our favour, that this was an isolated incident. Well, you've proved beyond any doubt that it's anything but.
Yes, and we've just had another one in from Nikki. I'll just read it on X. £623, 7 days to pay for energy used more than a year ago after he'd left the supplier because, he says, of woeful customer service. So, you know, it's still going on. Now, last week, we revealed 3,000 people, more than that, had complained to the Ombudsman. And as you said, most people don't do that. Most people don't even complain. Some people might just pay up. How widespread do you think this practice is?
Well, I don't know, but the scale of what you've uncovered suggests it is pretty wide scale. And the attitude, the approach of the energy suppliers in chasing people is a real worry, isn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm absolutely determined to get to the bottom of it and find out and take action and make them change their ways, Paul.
Right, yeah, I mean, and on those ways, I mean, we heard people said they were demanding money with menaces. Though I have to say, Energy UK, which of course represents suppliers, say they've invested in improving their customer service, and overall there's been a drop in the number of complaints made to the Ombudsman. What's your message to the suppliers?
Well, I saw that Energy UK had given the advice to people to approach their suppliers. I think what we've heard categorically from your listeners is that that's where the problems really start. Mm. So, you know, I think we've got to talk to Energy UK, we've got to talk to Ofgem about their role in this, actually, because there are concerns around the whole energy market. And one thing I want to say to you, my committee coincidentally had decided that just this week we're going to hold an inquiry into energy bills, and I can guarantee you we'll be looking at back billing as part of that
yes,
work.
Because one of the features of this, as Dan explained so clearly, is that not only are these bills too old to ask for the money, but many of them are actually wrong. They're for thousands of pounds, which people clearly didn't say. So your committee will be looking at this. You're in a very good position to ask for the answers you want when you do that. And you mentioned Ofgem. I mean, they've told us it expects suppliers to fix errors promptly. But, you know, they're Ofgem's rules. Is it doing a good enough job of enforcing them?
Well, there are concerns about Ofgem's role and its remit more widely. And that's something that we're continuing to explore as a committee as well. But I do think that we've really got to hold the companies to account, because everybody says that the rules are clear, which they are, by the way, very, very clear. And you've explained them well. The companies say they accept the rules. The companies say they're abiding by the rules. And yet they clearly aren't. And you would think this was quite easy to fix. So I'm determined to get to the bottom of it. And that will involve Ofgem. But it will involve the trade body Energy UK and the companies themselves.
And finally, Bill Esterson, people have said, as I said, they've been pressured into paying. Many people probably have paid. If they have paid a bill, they should never have been sent. Should they get their money back now?
Absolutely. And again, if they go to the Ombudsman, they have I think they've got a good chance of getting that money back. that's what happened with us, actually. We found we paid for things that we shouldn't have done. So I would encourage people to do it. But it is not an easy process. I think some of your listeners made that clear. So I think there's a question here around making the whole process easier too.
Yes, I mean, I was trying to get at, should the firms be finding these people, because they should know who they are, and just giving them the money, literally, in a word.
Oh, sure.
Should they be doing that?
I mean, in the first instance, the firms need to stop doing this, and they need to rectify it. You're absolutely right. But if they don't, then I think the Ombudsman's got a role here to play too, which, to be fair to them, they do.
Bill Esterson, Chair of the Energy Security Committee. Thanks.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
The following feature is paid and presented by the Department for Business and Trade.
What excites me most about the UK tech landscape over the next 5 years is not tech in itself, but the application of tech across the economy. It's really exciting. Tech is driving change and innovation.
Welcome to the United Kingdom, where the brightest tech innovators reshaping our world are celebrated. This year, the Department for Business and Trade are spotlighting global, trailblazing entrepreneurs through the Unicorn Kingdom Pathfinder Awards. John Edwards is the Director for Investment and one of the judges for the awards.
The Department of Business and Trade sees helping investors as its core mission. We help find things that they can invest in, so create a market. We can help them with the practical things that they need, whether it's planning, finding an office, getting the visas, getting the finance, R&D support that they need. And then we see this as a long-term project and a long-term support mechanism. So after they've landed, if there are things that they still need help with, we can help them with that. What was so special about being a judge at the Unicorn Kingdom Pathfinder Awards was the opportunity to see some of these companies right there beginning their journey into the UK market and investing in the UK. So what was really interesting about the finalists was how different they were in many ways. But what they all had was a really strong route to market, a really strong business. There was something unique about their technology, a unique offering. And actually, almost all of them also had real impact and value at the heart of what they did.
From cutting-edge AI to digital trade solutions, these innovators are building tomorrow's world today. Learn how the United Kingdom supports tech pioneers at great.gov.uk/UKPA.
Now, every year, the Department for Work and Pensions asks hundreds of thousands of bereaved relatives to repay state pensions it's wrongly sent to people who've already died. The department has confirmed to us it has no legal right to the money sent because of its own errors. Recent figures given to Parliament reveal that over the past 5 years, the DWP has paid more than £500 million in state pension and pension credit to people who had died, and it recovered around half of that by writing to bereaved relatives, like Moneybox listeners Jan and Dennis.
I got a letter from the DWP. We're sorry to hear Mr. Fulster has died and apologise for having to get in touch with you at this time. We are writing to you because £254.11 was incorrectly paid. Even though I'd done the tell us once immediately, you know, this payment had still come in after he'd died. It gave me details of how to pay it back, which is what I did on the day. I thought I'd got to do it. It was upsetting the way that the whole thing had happened, the way that the whole thing played out. And no, I didn't know that it didn't need to be repaid. Knowing my husband, he would be beside himself that this has been paid and it didn't need to have been.
I've been caught out by this procedure twice. You know, I took it as green that whatever was on the letter saying, you know, your father has been paid too much pension and we require you to return X. And I just did it on the basis that I wanted to settle all his affairs and my mum's affairs. I'm afraid I'm a sucker. There's one born every minute and I obey the government and I will pay it.
Well, they're not the only ones confused. Former Pensions Minister Sir Steve Webb says the letter the department sends out to people doesn't make it clear the payments are voluntary.
I was shocked, first of all, that it's a voluntary payment. And then I kind of started wondering whether people realise this. So I used the Freedom of Information Act to see the letter that got sent out and was shocked that the department doesn't anywhere say that this is not mandatory. And we have a lottery where people are sent a letter. The government doesn't own up to the fact there's no legal basis for forcing people to pay back. And what's going to happen in practice, I fear, is that people who perhaps are distressed from a bereavement, perhaps a bit frightened of officialdom and someone chasing them for money, those are the people who will pay back, the most vulnerable, and other people don't pay back. So I think what I would like to see is a consistent approach. So if the law is at the moment that they don't have a legal basis to get back overpayments, then if their position is, well, frankly, everybody should be paying this, then they should get the law clarified. After all, they make the laws. But if they don't have the legal power to do this, they shouldn't be trading on people simply not knowing how the system works.
The Department for Work and Pensions told us it's not our intention to cause distress. However, we have a responsibility to taxpayers to recover overpayments. It added, though, there is no legal obligation to repay a debt of this type. The department also acknowledged it should only send out just one letter asking for the return of money it can't legally reclaim, but admitted it did send out two to Jan, and it's apologised for that. Well, listening to all that is Melinda Giles, a partner at the law firm Giles Watson. Melinda Giles, Sir Steve Webb was Pensions Minister for 5 years. He didn't know there was no obligation to repay the money. Now he's concerned the letter sent by his former department fails to make that clear. In your view, do these letters imply the money should be repaid, must be repaid?
Oh, I think so. I think anybody receiving a letter that says you've been overpaid and please can you pay it back would assume it's an obligation. Actually, the letters come in various forms. If they do not say you are obliged to provide this information and to repay the money, then actually you're correct. There is no legal obligation to do so.
And under what circumstances might you have to pay it then? Because if it's simply a payment after death, you're not, are you? But there are other circumstances when you have to.
There are other circumstances when the DWP are permitted and obliged, in fact, to look into the payments that were made to the deceased before they died. And those would be mostly in terms of means-tested benefits, when perhaps a change in circumstances hasn't been disclosed to the DWP, meaning that perhaps pension credit was overpaid during the lifetime.
Yeah. And Jan said she used the Tell Us Once service that, of course, informs all government departments when a person has died. Why does it happen? Why does the department pay out pensions after that's been done?
It's simply about delay in administration. The Tell Us Once service, as Jan has said, is the correct way to notify the DWP and various government departments that someone's died. It's supposed to simplify the process. But the DWP sometimes take time to process that and payments go through in the meantime.
Yes, of course, they do say, the department, that it's taxpayers' money. And also we've had emails from people, we had some this very morning, saying, well, they paid it back because it was the right thing to do. If someone gets a letter like this, where there is no obligation, what should they do? Or is that a moral question, not for a lawyer?
I would say moral may be slightly pressurised term, but it is a matter of choice. And as the DWP say, they have their own duty to the taxpayer to attempt to recover money. And so provided they don't harass people, as you've mentioned, by sending more than one letter and wording the letter in a threatening way for which there's no basis, then they're probably fulfilling their duty. As to whether people to pay back, it is really a matter for them.
Yes, it's a matter for them and what they think, I suppose, their loved one would have wanted. They're only supposed to send one letter, the DWP says, and I think you've said that in the past.
Yes.
If you just ignore it then and you're not obliged to do it, will it just go away?
It will. There's no legal basis on which they can take us any further.
No. Now, many people use a solicitor as an executor when someone's died. Is your experience of solicitors, do they generally know that as an executor, they actually don't have to repay this money?
Well, I can't speak for all solicitors. And of course, sometimes solicitors are the executor and sometimes they're acting for an executor or a personal representative. What I would say is generally it is about a solicitor taking the consulting with the beneficiaries, because as we've discussed, they may have a different view or approach to each other in this situation.
It's up to the beneficiaries. But if they do pay it, if an executor does pay this money, which isn't, I think, what you call a lawful debt, can the heirs ask for it back from the solicitor?
Potentially. A typical lawyer's answer in that it depends on the circumstances, but potentially.
OK, we'll leave it there. Melinda Giles of Giles Wilson, thanks very much. And we've had a lot of emails on this topic too, and Eva Devlin's been looking at them, Eva.
One listener said his mother died recently and it took 14 days before the paperwork was completed by the new system, where the cause of death needs to be verified by a medical examiner. He also said you can't register the death until you have this, and without a death certificate, overpayment will likely occur in virtually every death of people who are of pension age. We asked the DWP about this and are waiting for a specific response. In the meantime, it said it encourages anyone with concerns to call them.
And Maureen wrote, when my mother-in-law died, we got a letter asking for repayment. I rang the DWP. She did just that. The person I spoke to said I was under no obligation to pay the money back, so we used it towards her funeral. A very practical approach. And I just add, we've had one from Kelvin who said he got £600, which in a state of grief, he did pay back. And more are coming in as we speak. Thanks for them. And thanks very much, Eimear, for reading some of them. And we do always read them all. Now, another subject we get a lot of emails about is tax on savings. Most people can have a £1,000 a year in savings interest before they start paying income tax from this personal savings allowance. That allowance, though, has been frozen since it was introduced in 2016. In that time, the best interest rates on savings have risen from what I believe was around 1.25% to 5% almost now. Government figures show the number of people expected to pay basic rate tax on their savings interest has grown by nearly 750,000 in 3 years. And one who sent us an email about this was a rather worried Eva.
I work full time and I pay tax under pay as you earn, and I recently inherited some money. I've started up a savings platform account, but I'm aware that I will need to pay tax, or I think I'll need to pay tax on any interest earned. My question for Moneybox is, given that I'll be earning interest that will be over my personal allowance, how do I let the tax office know about that? Do they or do I have to send in a self-assessment form, or will they automatically take any interest earned off my earnings?
Well, one of many similar inquiries. So live now to our Carlisle studio, where Helen Thornley of the Association of Tax Technicians is going to enlighten us. Helen Thornley, Eva works. She says her inheritance will earn more than £1,000 of interest. How will the tax due on that be collected from her?
Oh, thanks, Paul. Well, for most employees and pensioners who don't otherwise need to be in self-assessment, HMRC will generally calculate any extra tax on interest automatically based on information that they get from banks and building societies. The challenge is knowing when you're going to get this demand, and normally that would be by November following the end of the tax year. But there's, as you say, there's been so many for the 23-24 tax year, it's going to take HMRC until the end of March this year to write out to everybody that they know about.
So, in fact, people are going to be getting notices from HMRC that they might find a bit alarming, but they relate to interest paid in the past, quite a while ago. How do they adjust your tax code initially? Do they just estimate what they think you'll get?
Yes, so initially they'll take an estimate and then they'll correct it when they get the final figures. So in February this year, the 25-26 tax codes will be coming out for the next tax year, and that will be based on information that HMRC know about from the 23-24 tax year, so that's 2 years out of date.
But it's out of date, as you say, and it's bound to be wrong, almost bound to be wrong, isn't it? Because interest rates change, you put more or less money in, you're saving up for something, then you spend it. So it's going to be wrong. So this is a real catch-up process that people might find confusing.
Yes, I think people find the catch-up hard. You can, when you get your POIE code, ring up HMRC and say, look, I think your estimate might be wrong. So you could say increase it because you know you've got, you're expecting more savings. But otherwise, it's a case of waiting for them to go through the process and then get this, say, this demand issued to you.
Yes. Now, I mean, as I said, a lot more people are paying tax on savings. If you've got less than, what, about £19,000-£20,000, even in the highest interest account, or your money's in a tax-free ISA, of course, you don't have to worry about it. But if you have more than that, is there any, what should you do? What should you be aware of?
I think the key thing is to keep track of it, because although HMRC gets the data from banks and building societies, it's a really complex process matching it to individual taxpayers, and it doesn't always work. And if they don't pick you up and they don't send you a computation, it's still your responsibility to let them know. So I would say go through your savings for 23, 24 in particular, and add it up if it's over the £1,000. Wait until March, end of March. If you've not heard from HMRC by then you need to ring or write to them with the details, and then they'll send you out a correct computation for you.
Yes, and you can challenge it. You can challenge it if it's wrong. But how do you know? I mean, can you get a certificate of how much interest you've paid, or do you have to go through your documents or your records on your computer and add it all up?
It varies from bank to building society, but generally you should be able to get a certificate from them of the interest received for the tax year. So if you bank online, you may be able to find that within the details. Otherwise, you'll need to contact your bank and ask them to issue you one, so that you can do that calculation each year.
Yeah, and they have to send that to you, don't they? Now, interest rates are falling. Bank rate has gone down just in the last few days. Savings rates follow or will follow. Does that mean the number of people paying tax on interest will begin to fall rather than rising every year as it has been?
It will do, but I think it will be quite slow because, you see, we're still finishing off 23-24. We've got the current tax year that we're in now, 24-25. Until savings rates have dropped significantly, we're still going to have high numbers of people in this position.
Yes, so something that you should keep an eye on. Helen Thornley of the Association of Tax Technicians, thanks. And I have to say, seldom has our email been so busy about back billing, Ofgem. Many people saying to us, well, you should pay a bill even if technically they can't send it you. Other people saying you should gladly pay back that pension from your deceased relative. Others taking quite the opposite view and saying how appalling it all is. So there we are, both sides of the story from you as ever. Thanks for that. Well, tax you do have to pay, pensions you don't have to repay, and energy bills you definitely shouldn't pay unless you want to. Quite the podcast to leave you better off. Remember to subscribe to the podcast and never miss a show. And you also get Felicity Hannah every Wednesday with Moneybox Live. Next up, how much do you need to retire well? Let us know your tax, pension, energy bill or any other money woes or indeed ways. Email moneybox@bbc.co.uk or send a comment or voice note on WhatsApp 03306 783 183. In this podcast, the reporter was Dan Whitworth, researchers Joe Krasner and Ema Devlin, studio manager Ben Houghton, our editor was Sarah Rogers. I'm Paul Lewis. This was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds. And now, another reason for your hair to stand on end.
This is Danny Robbins here, host of Uncanny, with some exciting news to share. The Uncannyverse is getting even bigger with a brand new Uncanny TV series on BBC Two and iPlayer, featuring some frankly terrifying cases that will make your hair stand on end. But then we will be taking an even deeper dive into these stories with Uncanny Postmortem, a new visualised podcast, straight afterwards on BBC Two, iPlayer, and right here as audio on BBC Sounds. Expect spine-tingling new twists and some chilling revelations. That is Uncanny Postmortem. Join me if you dare.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
The following feature is paid and presented by the Department for Business and Trade.
What excites me most about the UK tech landscape over the next 5 years is not tech in itself, but the application of tech across the economy. It's really exciting. Tech is driving change and innovation.
Good.
Welcome to the United Kingdom, where the brightest tech innovators reshaping our world are celebrated. This year, the Department for Business and Trade are spotlighting global, trailblazing entrepreneurs through the Unicorn Kingdom Pathfinder Awards. John Edwards is the Director for Investment and one of the judges for the awards.
The Department of Business and Trade sees helping investors as its core mission. We help find things that they can invest in, so create a market. We can help them with the practical things that they need, whether it's planning, finding an office, getting the visas, getting the finance, R&D support that they need. And then we see this as a long-term project and a long-term support mechanism. So after they've landed, if there are things that they still need help with, we can help them with that. What was so special about being a judge at the Unicorn Kingdom Pathfinder Awards was the opportunity to see some of these companies right there beginning their journey into the UK market and investing in the UK. So what was really interesting about the finalists was how different they were in many ways, but what they all had was a really strong route to market, a really strong business. There was something unique about their technology, a unique offering, and actually almost all of them also had real impact and value at the heart of what they did.
From cutting-edge AI to digital trade solutions, these innovators are building tomorrow's world today. Learn how the United Kingdom supports tech pioneers at great.gov.uk/UKPA.